Hello, everybody. Sit right down. Welcome to Guy's Night at the Gamers Inn. I'm a guy. My guest is a guy here. Guy's Night. So, I'm your host, Ryan, and I'm joined today by Joel Duggan. Hello, Joel. How's it going?
Hello, hello, hello. How's it going with you?
Pretty good. Us doing good has nothing to do. Jocelyn's away this week, so we pulled in Joel to kind of discuss video games and stuff. She'll be back next week. I think it has something to do with the Wii U coming out on Sunday. She just secretly doesn't want to hear how awesome it is, maybe.
She's avoiding it.
Yeah, yeah. I can
understand. She's avoiding the Wii U. No, as would I. Well, you will find no Nintendo fanboy in me, sir.
No. Well, you're new to gaming, so I don't like most people get into gaming like late in, or I guess you've been a gamer for a long time, kind of falling in and out of the hobby, right?
Yeah, off and on. I mean, it's when I've had time. Obviously, more so lately because it's a great way for Jocelyn and I to spend time together. But beyond that, I haven't had a lot of time for it previous, and what I have had has always been just computer gaming, whatever my Mac would run, StarCraft, Warcraft, that kind of stuff. But lately, console gaming has been a new adventure for me because I've not had access to one before.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. I mean, most people aren't going to be like, yeah, I'm going to play the Wii as well. I mean, a lot of people did jump into the Wii when it came out, and they were new gamers, but they were like casual gamers, like the Wii Sports and the Just Dance crowd. So you kind of have to be a hardcore gamer to love, to look at the Wii U and say, yeah, that's something I want. Or a hardcore Nintendo gamer, I guess I should say. But we can get into that another time. Joel, cartoonist Joel, starcrossonline.com, correct?
That is my website, yeah.
Very good, very good. So let's get started here on what we're playing. You've been pretty vocal about playing the Mass Effect series lately. How's that going?
I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it a lot, actually. I took a while to get into it. Yeah, the first Mass Effect, I started playing because Jocelyn was busy doing something, probably recording a podcast, and I got into first Mass Effect, and I was lost. I had no idea what kind of game it was. I didn't know a lot about the control scheme. It was a lot of sci-fi fantasy history to kind of dive into all at once, and I get overwhelmed. So I ended up putting it down. It was also a lot of talking in the first game. There's not a lot of shooting right away. So it took me a little bit to kind of like figure out like where I wanted to go. And I felt like in the first game, there's this big gap between your first mission where you actually get to do something and then figuring out what you do next. And there's just a lot of walking around the Citadel. The Citadel is big and it's like learning a new map in any game and all that kind of stuff. Not to mention there are no maps. So it's all done by, you know, these, AI consoles or whatever that you have to interact with and stuff. So I found it kind of a slog at first, but then I got bit by the story. And I also got bit by the loot process, the gear your gun up and make it as cool as you can, or as efficient, I guess, as you can. And I really enjoyed that aspect of the game, to the frustration of some people that like to watch me play, seeing as that's kind of boring to watch someone go through add-ons and stats and gun augmentations and stuff like that. Well, does this give me more damage, or does this give me more accuracy, or is that going to be better against this type of enemy? And I noodle over that kind of stuff. I'm kind of a loot whore when it comes to that kind of stuff in games.
You're a numbers guy.
I am. I really enjoy that aspect of it. So I got into that, and I quickly completed the first game, then got into the second game, finished that, and now I'm into the third. So I guess, spoiler-free people, I have not yet finished Mass Effect 3. So I don't want to, you know, get into too much of spoiling how it ends. And I can't really speak to that big kerfuffle with the end of the game and how everybody was really pissed off about that. But I do have some beefs that we can actually get into later on in the show. But for now, I think what I like so much about the gameplay is that I'm a soldier. And normally I go for more of a fantastical type of character when I play RPGs. Like, I want to be like the spellcaster, or like in WoW, I'm a paladin. But with this, I tried being an infiltrator in Mass Effect 2 after being a soldier in Mass Effect 1, and I'm now back to being a soldier in Mass Effect 3. I just like the guns. I currently have a Mantis version 5 sniper rifle that is my best friend. And I've been doing, after doing so well in the first Mass Effect by just kind of playing and what's the word I'm looking for? Just kind of going with your gut. Like, I didn't really play the game in terms of the decisions that we're making. I was just kind of going with whatever, however I would answer. And it ended up going pretty Paragon. And then I realized that having those points allowed me to do different options in the game and stuff like that. Because Jocelyn was really good about not spoiling too much for me. She didn't want to, like, give away a whole lot, which was frustrating for her because I had a lot of questions.
Like, you didn't want her to say, oh, if you do this, this, and this, you'll get, like, this outcome. Because the whole point about the Mass Effect universe is, and you mentioned the first one, like, just a lot of story, not a lot of gameplay. And I think that was one of the reasons why I was so drawn to the series, because I was just like, I had the game in Peterborough and I was living 2 hours away, and I would drive back and forth to play the game on the weekends just so I could play it because my Xbox was away from home. And the story was something like, I just, okay, I'm going to get through this shooting and then get to the story so I can experience what's going on. And that's kind of what I wanted to do. But with these with the newer games, there's more Paragon Renegade stuff, and if you do specific things, like choices affect what's going on. Like, I'm sure you've noticed that your save carries over from 1 to 2 and 2 to 3, and you're noticing some decisions. Like, for example, in 1 you have the Bug Queen or something. Did you spare her, or did you let her, or did you kill her? What did you do with that?
I set her free.
So you set her free.
Yeah, so
So.
I have the Rachni on my side. I'll give you a quick rundown. I saved Rex in Mass Effect 1, which is cool because it means he was around in Mass Effect 2. And there was some other thing in Mass Effect 2 that happened. Oh, was it the Geth thing? I think it was the Geth thing where you meet Legion and you're supposed to reset or destroy. Reprogram or destroy an entire station full of bad Geth, and I blew them the hell up. Despite the fact that I'm a pretty Paragon game player, I found that there was some things where I'm just kind of like, no, this is going to bite me in the ass later. I'm just going to blow them up, because at that point they weren't all AI. Like they just seemed like a threat waiting to happen. So that was one other thing that I did. The only thing that I don't like about the way that some of the Paragon and Renegade decisions go is that, especially after finishing the game and then looking up some stuff online, the result is the same. Like, you have a Renegade or a Paragon decision to make, but ultimately that person still dies. It's just a matter of how they die, or this event still happens. It's just a matter of whether you attempt to prevent it or whether you push it forward. So that kind of stuff is like, well, I'm not really choosing my own adventure. I'm just kind of deciding whether I'm, being, kind of a goody-goody Luke Skywalker or kind of a Han Solo, at the, along the adventure. So that kind of stuff I found a little bit weak. But like I said, I've enjoyed the story so far. It's one of the things, especially with the older games that are a little bit dated. They look a little bit wonky. The graphics aren't so good. Some of the gameplay controls are a little bit off. Some of those games, especially Mass Effect 1, the story is what kind of propelled me through. Whereas now that I'm on Mass Effect 3, obviously it's a good looking game. The controls are a little bit different, but I think better than Mass Effect 2. And that kind of stuff has helped me get through some of the sticky points with some more active gameplay. I feel like Mass Effect 3 has got a lot more action than the two predecessors.
There's in 3 there's a lot of like crazy stuff going on. I mean, there's a lot more action because it's a lot more, I guess, dire. There's the events are like shit's going down. Whereas in 2 and even 1, 1's a very clean game. Not a lot of bad things are happening. You're more just like doing preemptive stuff. And then in 2 it starts to like it's the lead up to the conclusion is all again a clean sort of environment. And then at the end of 2 you go off into this, basically it sets you up for 3 where you go into this very harsh environment and people will die. That's a great question. At the end of 2, did you have any squad mates, kick the bucket?
Yeah, I lost one.
You lost one.
Morden.
Oh
Morden.
no.
I know that I knew that I didn't want Garrus or Tali to die. So in the very last mission in 2, I had them with me.
Very good.
So I was like, okay, you guys are staying close because I like you. But the other people, I was like, well, whatever. I mean, if Jacob could care less. Miranda, nah, don't care. But there was other people in the crowd. Like, I like Jack and I like Morden. And there was a couple of other people that I thought were really cool. But you can't take everybody. So I kind of had to, split it around. What's funny is that I sent Jacob back to the ship with the rest of the crew, thinking that the crew would get there, but the person that you sent to oversee that operation would like sacrifice themselves to save everybody. Because I didn't like him, and I was like, well, if he dies, he dies, whatever. I know that some things are going to be unavoidable. What I should have done was sent Morden with him, and then he would have been okay, and then somebody else would have died on the collector ship in 2. So I apparently there's a lot with Morden in 3 that I'm missing out on, so I've been told.
Yeah, well, I mean, sort of, but there is a like. BioWare is really good about slotting these secondary characters in. So you mentioned Rex survived, aka you didn't kill him. But I did. I thought so when I was playing Mass Effect, Rex was going at Ashley, the racist human. Not my Ashley, but in the video game, the Ashley. I can't remember her last name. That would make the confusion a lot less worse. But anyway,
Williams, I think.
yes, thank you, Ashley Williams. Rex is like charging her, and I had to make a split decision. Like, either I kill him, and just it's like nothing happens. I think you had an option to like yell at Rex to try and calm him down, which didn't work. And I just he charged Ashley, and I'm like, well, fuck it. If he's not gonna fall in line, my shotgun's gonna end him. So I didn't have Rex, but in the sequel, they kind of I think it's they slot in somebody else. Somebody, I think it's his brother or something, I don't know, but it's the secondary character, and it feels like you're getting less of what you would have got if Rex was still alive. So I'm sort of experiencing the same thing you're experiencing with Mass Effect 3 when I played 2 because I didn't have Rex. Yeah, like there's a lot of things you need to do in the Mass Effect game to sort of get that perfect outcome. So in Mass Effect 2, I did everything. Everything I could possibly do, all the upgrades, all the everything. I paid close attention to every time they say, we need a strong biotic to protect us with the shield and stuff like that. And if you do it, it's the type of game where you could totally spoil it and just go to a guide and figure out exactly what you need to do, which I didn't do.
Yeah,
Just,
I've been
yeah.
avoiding stuff like that too. I'm always really careful when I look up because there's sometimes you want to know something and it's not anything kind of spoiler. It's just a stupid game mechanic or something that they didn't put in. Like they say, oh, well, this, artifact is on this planet. And you're just like, well, that planet isn't being highlighted on my galaxy map right now. And I don't really feel like spending 45 minutes flying around looking for the damn thing. So that kind of stuff I'm not too worried about. But when I read that article, on Wikipedia or whatever, I have to be very careful, do like a word search and then just zoom in on that one sentence because I don't want to get any spoilers for, later on. The one thing I will say about, playing ahead or playing having a different game experience is that me coming to Mass Effect so late, all the DLC for 2 and 3, Jocelyn already had downloaded. So all the things that she played after the fact, I was playing along with, as long as as if it was just part of the story. And one of the biggest differences was in 3, the DLC for the Prothean. What's his name? Talgic? I can't remember his name. Anyway, the one Prothean, the only guy that's alive.
The last Prothean.
Yeah. So his DLC. That was really interesting for me because I did it very early on in Mass Effect 3. And then I got all this backstory about who the Protheans were, how they failed against the Reapers and all this stuff. And that wasn't in Jocelyn's original Mass Effect 3 playthrough. And once I completed all that, she then fessed up and said, okay, I have to tell you this. I didn't have any of that. And I was like, wow, that would suck because it felt so much more, robust moving forward. you know, having this information versus like not having it at all and just trying to guess with you know, with what the Protheans were. And I mean, not to mention that he kicks ass. I love bringing him on almost every mission because he's this great kind of soldier slash biotic to bring along and just kick some tail. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who were your go-tos, you know, for your squads?
I was a huge fan of Tali and Garrus. Garrus for sure. He was my homeboy through the whole series, and there's a lot of touching moments with him throughout the series. And he's just this great guy. He's like your buddy that you go after you save the world and have a beer. You know, that doesn't that's not a spoiler. That's just a metaphor, I guess. But anyways, aside from Garrus, in one, I would always pick Liara, and Liara was the love interest throughout the series. Except for two, where she like disappeared. She was sort of.
She became the shadow broker.
Yeah. So like in that period, it was like okay, Tali, you're pitch hitting because Liara's not interested. So yeah, my go to was. Yeah. So again, that's another thing is like your relationships in these games is that Liara wasn't there, and the game actually rewarded the player if he held off and stayed true to Liara, because then at the end of two, you would have seen where there was the love scene. You would have seen Shepard kind of just looking at a photo of Liara all lovingly and clutching it as he went to sleep before the final battle. But no, in terms of my go-tos, especially in three, it was Garrus and probably Liara. But other than that, I would bring the guy. There was a guy there. No, not Freddie Prinze Jr. He sucked. But yeah, the Protheum is cool. I mean, being DLC, it's like, well, I paid this extra money. I might as well bring him along.
Yeah, there's Caden and what was the other guy? Oh, the James. I can't remember his last name. He's the big Hispanic guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Vega.
Yeah, Vega, yeah. So, I mean, for me, so far, through one, it was Rex and Garrus were my main squad guys. It was Garrus, and I don't know who I brought with me a lot in two. I think I probably I didn't like bringing the Krogan grunt because he was really obnoxious, and I got tired of listening to him say stuff every 5 seconds in my like right surround speaker. I was like, God, shut up, make it stop. I try to remember who else I brought with me. Wow, that's really bad. I feel like I would probably bring Miranda because I always had to bring a biotic with me because Garrus was so tech heavy, and both Garrus and I were infiltrators at the time or had the same sort of abilities. So I always had to bring somebody that had the biotics on the go. I brought Morden once and he was okay. He was also chatty, which I didn't like. But I feel like in three, it's definitely Garrus and the Prothean are my go-to. But I do bring, I do like bringing Edie along. I think it's really cool that she's able to actually come along on missions in three. Who else did I bring? Liara from time to time, because I'm not a fan of her character, but her powers and her abilities and stuff like that in three are pretty kick-ass. She can do some pretty cool stuff.
She's very powerful, especially in three there. But I never played as a biotic in the games. I think I was a soldier in one, a vanguard in two, where you could kind of like pop in and zoom in and do explosions. And then in three, I was an engineer. So, but you could also, so you could also be like a biotic. You could be the biotic and kind of go in there and cause explosions and pull people around and stuff. And, now how much group control did you do? Did you do a lot of like orders for your guys, or do you kind of let them do whatever they need to do?
I've been experimenting with it, and I have been doing it since one because it's such an easy thing on the directional pad to just tell them where to go. I never really saw the results of it. Like I would say, okay, you stay here, you go there, and it would be no different than if I just told them to hang with me and do their thing. The only thing that I have noticed in three is that when you tell them both to attack a specific target, we certainly down it a lot faster. Like, they really do attack that one, like if a Banshee or a Goliath or something shows up. Goliath? Atlas. What are they called? The big
The
armor thing
robot,
from Cerberus.
yeah, Atlas.
Atlas, yeah. So, I mean, it's a Goliath in StarCraft. I'm getting confused. So that works, but I haven't had a lot of success with putting, like, put them on either side of a door or something, because in Mass Effect, there seems to be so many doors that just lead to more doors. So I was like, okay, this looks like a really big important door. Garrus, take the left. Liara, take the right. Everybody get ready. Open it up. It's an empty room with another door again. So I stopped doing that because it really started to get kind of annoying. And then I do switch weapons with them, though. Like, there's a lot of times when I've had a really difficult room or a really different difficult encounter with a lot of, like, Reaper, Guardians, and I think Guardians, the one that looks like the ones that look like Garrus.
Yeah, I think, or Marauders, maybe.
Marauders, thank you. I've had so much sci-fi all thrown into my brain in the last month and a half that it's a little bit much to remember it all. But I'd had a lot of those guys, and that is when I would say, okay, Garrus, you take your sniper rifle. Let somebody, switch somebody else from a submachine gun to their heavy handgun, and then see how the outcome works. And I have noticed differences, when you do that. So that's the only real squad kind of commands. It's mostly weapons changes. Because I'm a soldier, I have access to all kinds of different ammo. And sometimes when I assign ammo to, like, Garrus or warp ammo for Liara, the rest of the squad gets that ammo because of the bonus points that they have with their tech trees. So I find that really useful. I've just actually recently discovered warp ammo because Liara, her level has got to the point where she can now share that with the rest of the squad
Oh,
by
good.
default. And it kicks the trash out of some enemies that I had previously had not trouble with, but you have to pump them full of, slugs before they actually fall. Whereas now it's like, six or eight shots and they're kind of done, which is kind of cool. I like the progression. I really felt better about, I feel like 1 and 3 are definitely my favorite. I didn't like 2 at all. I found, like, there wasn't enough control in upgrading your guns. Like, you couldn't tweak it to your playstyle. And I feel like you felt, by the time you ended 1, you felt like a hero. You felt like a badass, like running down the side of the Presidium to save the day. By that point, I had a really wicked rifle. I was kicking tail. It was awesome. I'm starting to get to that point now with Mass Effect 3, my sniper rifle. I've got one of the Widow, Black Widow, or just the Widow. I think I just had the Widow. So that's fun to experiment with, some stopping power there. But I felt like in 2, like, everything was just almost there. Like, I didn't really feel super strong about stuff. And I'm wondering, I don't know whether that's because I had an infiltrator, so I was limited in that way, because I know I missed my assault rifle in 2. That was my big thing. Do you have a favorite gun?
Not really. Like, it's tough for me. Like, when I think about the Mass Effect single player, I always think about whatever gun I would have. Usually I would stick with the assault rifle and maybe a pistol just in case I ran out of ammo. But I was like heavy power user. I don't really remember one much, but I think it was like an assault rifle mostly. So not really. Like, I just prefer to use whatever I can do to like mow guys down. Although in 2, I did go through the entire game with a shotgun because with the Vanguard you would just pop in, take a couple shotgun shots off, and then like run out of there. And so it was kind of hectic. But yeah, like I just did a lot of like power controls. So in Mass Effect, something you can do is you can do like a biotic explosion. And what I would do is I would hotkey my two partners' powers, the ones that would explode together, and you basically affect a user with a biotic, maybe from Liara, and then shoot another biotic at it, and it would create this explosion. It was very handy for taking out multiple groups of people. So I was using biotics more than I was shooting things. I mean, in multiplayer, it's a little different. It's more about shooting, like with 3. Have you done much multiplayer with 3 yet, or are you kind of waiting?
I haven't done any, and it's actually one of the reasons why I stuck with a soldier or went back to a soldier, I guess, for 3, is because I know that I'll have access to play all the different types of characters in the multiplayer.
Yeah, and that's a great point because in Mass Effect, I've only played 3 of the 6 classes up until the multiplayer in 3. So that's really neat to be able to experience. And you're not only experiencing six classes, the six that are offered in the single player, you're offered what feels like up to 20 different like combos of classes. Like there's a lot of difference in there, and they've actually created new classes for the multiplayer and new powers from what I've been able to actually get, because there's a lottery system for characters. You basically earn credits through winning matches, and then you spend those credits on like we'll say like a grab bag of items.
Yeah, I got when I first I signed up and I created one character who happens to be an engineer actually,
Oh, cool.
and then I got a couple of like free packages just to kind of get yourself started,
Right.
and I ended up getting a Black Widow sniper rifle, and I got an angry look from Jocelyn when I told her that my startup package had this thing in it. That's all I really got. I got like a couple of other little trinkety things, like arm pads or something, but nothing too crazy. But yeah, the one thing that I have noticed a lot about the gear in three is that they've kind of gone back towards what you can do in one, but
Right.
they don't give you numbers. They give you percentages and visual representations in like a power bar, from A to B. Is, this you're assuming that this is 100%, but it's not. And it's really hard to get your head around, like, okay, well, if I spend 5,000 on this, new helmet or new visor, and I replace my old one, what is it going to do to my powers? And you don't, it's you kind of have to go in and check and say, oh, this looks like it adds, 5 or 10%. That's not a whole lot in my head. But then you go and look at it on a bar and it's a huge chunk. And he's like, oh, well, crap, I should go buy that visor. Or you say, all right, I'm going to spend like 50,000 credits on this whole armor piece. And then you get it on, you realize, oh, I have to wear the whole thing as a set. I can't mismatch it with anything else,
Right.
which means that the whole thing is, I mean, essentially useless. I mean, like it's like, hey, it's great. It's giving me some power boosts and some shield protection, but I'm a soldier and it just took my weapon damage from plus 60% to nothing. Like, well, that's a waste of 50 grand. I was cheesed off about that. So I feel like the first Mass Effect, although it was very noodly, like you really had to get in there and tweak things and get numbers, at least it gave you like a plus 60 or plus 45 to damage or to cryo or to whatever. And it was something that would stick in your head so that when you went to see the next item or the next piece and it only said plus 30, to weapon damage, you're like, oh, okay, well, that's not as good as the last one I just saw. But when it says it adds 10% of your total, you're like, well, I don't know what my total is to start with, and then to figure that up against, something that adds 15%, but then gives you 10% somewhere else. And I understand that, I mean, it's just more math to do, but I just felt like it was clearer when jumping from room to room, or not room to room, from store to store, in terms of like buying a gun, buying an upgrade, buying an armor piece. I felt like it was confusing in three. I've kind of got my head around it now because you can press, I think it's X when you're in the armor place and see stats as opposed to the bars, which is nice.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, hey, they're putting instructions up on the screen, Joel. You should probably read them before you
No,
start really complaining too much about stuff.
I
So,
just want to shoot stuff. Come on.
yeah, well, look,
Instructions.
that's actually a really good point. It's one beef I do have with Mass Effect. It's both good and bad, is that you never really know what's going to happen with the story when you log in to play the game, if you haven't played through it before. So you log in and you're in the mood to go shoot some Cerberus punks because you've got armor piercing up the wazoo, and they're hiding behind their shields or hiding behind planters, and you're like, I can shoot through that. I don't care. This is going to be awesome. And then you log in, you're like, okay, like an hour before bed, this is going to be awesome. This is going to be great. And you sit there and you talk to people on the Citadel for like 45 minutes, and you're like, this is all interesting, and I'm really glad that they put this detail in the game, but I just want to shoot things. Help. And I the unexpectedness of it is good, but at the same time, it's hard to predict when you're in a mood for a shooter and you get talking heads or vice versa. You know, like you're like, oh, I'm just going to chill. Like, this is going to be great. I'm going to take 20 minutes and just do this quick mission. 45 minutes later, it's the most intense gaming experience I've had. You know, it's like, I'm getting my ass handed to me. I was like, no, God, this is, I have to go to bed, but I have to finish the mission. Like, it's frustrating in a good way, I guess. I don't know how to express it. It's just, I've been Mass Affected.
Yeah. You've been in the deep shit playing the Mass Effect. Sounds like it's crazy. You've kind of rolled through the series in what, a couple months now, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's been a couple months. The first one was a lot longer. I played through the half of the first one really slowly. I went through the second one really quite quickly, and I'm trying not to play too much of the third one right now because I just don't have time. And it's one of those things now that I want to see what happens. It's like watching, it's like having a series on Netflix where you can just watch the next one without a second thought. There's no commercials, you know, there's no load time. It's just go. And I'm trying not to because I'm very busy with work. I can't stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning playing Mass Effect, which has happened by accident. But has happened, and then I have to get up at 6 and go to work. It just it's a problem.
Yeah, I actually do a lot of video gaming on the weekend, and stay up until 2, 3, sometimes 4 without realizing. And that's mostly because during the week I'm like, okay, it's 10 o'clock. I have to be up at 6 for work. I best not start anything. Sometimes I don't play games during the week at all. It's mostly just iPhone or 3DS stuff, but this weekend, I mean, people will probably realize that Ryan has been pretty quiet the last 3 days on Twitter. Haven't really been talking a lot because I've been really busy with, I have it here right here, the Wii U. Here's the tablet controller right there for everyone to see. So
could it be any bigger?
Yeah, it looks big, right? It's very it's very daunting, and it's weird. Like, if I hold it up like this, this is how you hold it, right? It feels good, but it's big.
And that's hefty. Like, it's quite thick.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty. What, thick.
Inch? Yeah. Oh, I see. There's a okay. I see now. It's contoured. I didn't realize there was a contour to it.
Yeah, it's weird. When I first started playing with it, I was. By the way, it took. Okay, first of all, I don't know how familiar you are with console launches, but. They're a big thing. When the Xbox and the PS3 came out, lines around the building, you know, a lot of fanfare. When the Wii came out, it was sort of a slow burn, then crazy holidays where you could not find them anywhere. This is the most, similar to when the 3DS came out, this is one of the most quiet launches I've ever seen. Like, I pre-ordered, I went to EB, and there was like 15 people there. I was in and out in a half hour, and console launches are not like that. I was actually nervous before I went in because I thought it was going to be crazy. I just wanted to get my console and go home, and I actually did get to do that. But then in hindsight, it was kind of like, it feels like people weren't, well, okay, people probably realize people aren't as interested in the Wii U as they are in, say, the next Xbox or PS3 coming out, right? So, but it's just weird to see it, right, with a new Nintendo console. And in Peterborough, it's all sold out everywhere. You can't grab them anywhere until the next shipment comes in. But I have been hearing in bigger cities, they have a lot of units, and you could pretty much walk into any major retailer and pick one up, no problem. I don't know what it's like in Halifax, but I'm sure, like, if I were to go to Toronto Future Shop, and they would have a bunch. So I don't think the Wii U is as big a launch hit as other consoles or even the future consoles. But aside from that, just playing with it has been really cool. It's really confusing with the screen. Like I said, there's a screen here. This pretty much acts as your I think I said the same thing anyways, but it acts as your screen. And when you're playing New Super Mario Brothers U on it, what's on the TV is on the screen. So you're kind of playing it and you don't really know what to look at. So you're getting identical views on both the screen and on the Wii U here, the Wii U tablet controller, and it's really confusing. It's weird.
Yeah. How do you feel about the Wii U not being able to play old Wii games? Like, it doesn't upscale stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, it's almost just like a convenience thing. Like I can unplug my Wii and I can throw Wii games into the Wii U, but you're right, there's no upscale, there's no, and I don't know how that sort of tech works, whether it would even be possible. I'm sure.
I thought it just didn't play them at all.
No, there is a Wii mode. You can throw a Wii
Oh,
disc
okay.
in there and then you go into a specific Wii mode and it just it's sort of like it's basically like just a Wii and it plays those games. It's compatible with all your Wiimotes and stuff. So I was playing you're still playing games with the Wiimote, the little controller things. So it's not much different from a Wii. It's just, beefed up graphics. Probably on par with 360 or PS3. They actually have Mass Effect 3 on the Wii U. I saw it there, but I didn't buy it again. I got Nintendo Land, New Super Mario Bros. U, and Zombie U. And Nintendo Land and New Super Mario Bros. U are sort of generic. Not generic, but they are Nintendo titles. Nothing to surprise you. Nintendo fun, just. It's not going to
You
shock
know what you're
you.
getting, yeah.
Exactly. But Zombie U is a little different in the sense that I've been playing it more because it is a unique experience in the sense that you play as a survivor and you're kind of thrown into this zombie apocalypse in London. And I won't go through all of it, but it uses the gamepad very well in the sense that the game never pauses when you're looking at inventory, when you're looking at when you're trying to open doors. It never pauses. The action is always happening. So say like zombies are coming after you and you're low in health. With Resident Evil 3, you would have been able, or 4, you would have been able to pause it, throw all your health units on you, and then get out of that pause menu and you're suddenly all back to health. But with this, you actually flick up on the gamepad to open your backpack. And on the screen, you see your guy go down into his backpack and start rummaging. And then on the Wii U tablet, you're actually like fiddling with your inventory with your fingers, like touch padding and stuff. And it's really cool because you actually see the zombies kind of on the screen, they're coming at you and they're surrounding you, right? So you're always on the lookout.
Right, so you'd be experiencing the same sort of thing that the character in the game would be experiencing. Like, 'cause if they look down and put their hand in a bag, they'd have to kind of use their peripheral to see when the zombies are coming, and you've got to do the same thing. It's interesting. I do you feel like it's, I mean, I obviously you've only had a few days to play with it, but do you feel like it's been worth the investment so far?
Well, I mean, it's sort of an unfair question because I'm almost going to say like, yeah, of course. I feel that way because I'm a big Nintendo fan and just playing like Nintendo Land is a great example. Like it's to the outsider, it's oh, that's just Wii Sports 3. It's just a bunch of mini games thrown together to get people to buy the system and then, that's all they buy. But with Nintendo Land, it really is just a sampling of all the Nintendo franchises in one game. So you get to experience Zelda, Metroid, Pikmin, and just a bunch of video game, just a bunch of mini games and stuff. And the graphics are, this is the first time we've seen Nintendo franchises in HD. And I mean, it's just a lot of fun. And the gamepad's used in interesting ways. I do think it was worth the money for me, but I mean, to an average gamer who has no interest in Nintendo franchises, you probably don't need to go out and pick this up because it's not going to offer you anything that the 360 or PS3 isn't offering you. The gamepad
That's
is.
yeah that's what I've I mean obviously I'm not privy to it because we don't have one but from what I've been hearing on tech news shows and other gaming podcasts I listen to is that it just feels like it's a late to the game. I mean, yeah, okay, you get some new Nintendo experiences if you're a part of that Nintendo crowd, but if the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 do all of these things already. For example, like bringing Mass Effect 3 to, the Nintendo Wii U is great, but I mean, Mass Effect 3 came out for the Xbox, what, March of 2012? So I'm kind of wondering why release so late? Are they banking on the experience of like this multiple screen tablet thing? Or do you think that there's other things coming for the Wii U? Like, is there some sort of like background plan? Like, they're laying the groundwork now and they haven't dropped the hammer, or do you really just think it's going to be this kind of it is what it is. Kind of like just like the Wii was, it is what it is. You buy it because you know what you're getting into and that's what you want. Or do you feel like it's going to be something where we just don't know around the corner that there's going to be some sort of thing? Because there's like a TV watching aspect to the Wii U, and then there's a bunch of other things that they're touting as like kind of like your living room one-stop shop. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's going to be something that brings it up to levels or above things like the Xbox and PlayStation 3, or is it going to just be what it is for the length of its cycle?
I think for Nintendo has a year at best to kind of prove itself, because the future consoles we're looking at a late 2013, early 2014 release. And even then, when we start hearing about that stuff, it's going to take a lot of steam out of Nintendo's sort of progress. So the TV stuff is interesting. Like there's a button here. I can push TV on it, and it's all set up to like control. Well, I won't show you because it probably won't look right, but you can control your TV from this remote. Which is interesting. I can mute it. I can turn the volume up and stuff. TV, I guess it's called, or the Wii U TV stuff isn't set up yet.
Yeah, that's coming in December, I think.
Yeah, and even then, I think you'll need like a cable subscription, which I don't have, so I won't be able to test that. I mean, I probably can look at shows and when they're on, but other than that, it won't provide any sort of like media thing for me. As far as I can tell, I mean, Netflix works great. Their Netflix is on there. That's checkmark. Other than that, like I can't stream media from my computer to the Wii U. I still have to boot my PS3 up for that. I can't play Blu-ray discs. Like PS3 is still going to remain my media console. But I think like with the second screen thing, sometimes with Zombie U, it feels integral to the game. It makes you panic. It makes you kind of think about your surroundings more. But with Super Mario, it's sometimes annoying. I haven't got to the point where I've had to turn the TV off and play on the Wii on the gamepad. It's always been, I don't know what to look at. Like I'm looking at the gamepad, yeah. And I'm looking up at the TV, and it's actually quite annoying. And you can't turn off the display on the gamepad.
That's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, if you're using it as a controller, the screen's going to be on. And I mean, I have the Pro controller here, which is it looks just like that's. If I showed you that
I remember the story that you guys talked about. It looks just like an Xbox controller.
I haven't actually been able to use it yet because none of the games I own support it for single player. Like I can't even play Mario with it. It's weird, and Nintendo's kind of like locked down their controller options. And I really wish there was, because basically the Pro controller is the same as the gamepad without the screen, but it doesn't support it.
It's an awful lot of naysaying for a Nintendo fanboy.
I'm just trying to keep it real here. I mean, I'm like I said, the Wii U is great, and I'm loving it. And the greatest part about it is Nintendo's finally joined us, not only in the real world when it comes to HD, but also with the online stuff. The Miiverse is something that people should be paying attention to, because it's basically Nintendo has created their own. The best way to explain it is to compare it to Steam communities. It's this whole social network built around the games on the Wii U, and you can drill down to specific games. Like, for example, you can go into the Zombie U community and like just talk about the game. People were actually like curious about whether the game. You can go in there and say, "How is this game, guys? Is it any good?" And people who are actually playing it can say, "Yeah, it's great," or "No, probably don't want to pick it up unless you like this, this, or this." So the Miiverse is very interesting, and you can have normal friends. There isn't this like 16-digit code you have to put in. You just add a person via their account name. So I mean, in that sense, Nintendo has really caught up. But again, it's all about catching up. And like I said, if they can't pull out some amazing titles in the next year to convince, like there are some Nintendo fans out there who are not buying the Wii U because there's just nothing there for them. Like new Super Mario Brothers U they've already played that game.
Just another Super Mario game. Yeah, I heard that earlier as well. I think from what you're saying, what Nintendo should do is focus on games that don't use that second screen as an afterthought. Like, actually have it be an integral part of the game experience, like digging in your bag when you're in a zombie game, or, I don't know, like, you know, I can see a lot of use for it as like a loot management system, mm-hmm. where you don't want that to pop up over your screen. You want to quickly be able to select a different type of arrow in a Zelda game, or you want to be able to, you know, use a different power in like a Mario Kart game or something, boost advantages in other sci-fi racers, stuff like that. And if they make that a real part of it and have it be affecting the environment, that, like, your living room, not the environment in the game, but have it affect that kind of gameplay, like you're expressing with the zombie thing, I think they'll not carve out a niche, but they'll at least be able to say, this isn't just a gimmick. Like, yeah. we're trying something new, and that will, even though, again, like, I'm not a huge Nintendo fanboy, but I, you know, that will at least earn them some brownie points, I think, even with the naysayers. People can't just say... that it's just a fad when they, if they do move forward and really put a lot of effort into making it a different gaming experience. Like, this is something that you cannot do on the Xbox, on the PlayStation 3, that sort of thing.
I mean, there are things you can do on the Wii U that you will never be able to do on the PS3 or the Xbox. We don't know what they're doing in the future, but like in this next year, they are going to get third-party games as like development on 360, PS3, and Wii U. The real test will be, can they sell enough consoles for people, for developers to say, okay, we need to make a version for the Wii U, the Xbox Next, and the PS4. We have to, or else we'll lose money, right? Whereas that's what every Nintendo fan's like, oh, please do that, because then I won't just have to wait every 6 months for a new Nintendo title for it. Because that's,
right.
Like, I'm just investing in the future of Nintendo. Like, I love Nintendo games. I know I'm going to buy them. And there's going to be one that comes out every 6 months that I'll buy and play. So the money is well spent for me. But for someone who can only buy one console or is just more interested in Xbox type stuff, you could probably hold off, and the 720 will be out at the end of the year, and you'll get the experiences you want. And the people who have Wii U's will be like, I guess I got to go buy an Xbox, which... I should, full disclosure, like, when the Xbox 720 comes out, I'm going to buy it. And I'm going to play probably a good portion of my third-party titles on the Xbox or on my PC, which I normally do.
Yeah.
Like I said, the Wii U is strictly a Nintendo and unique system for games. Like, Zombie U is a Ubisoft game, so I picked that one up. And
right, you're not going to play Zombie U on your PC.
No, because I mean, even if it was there, like, it's unique to the Wii U screen, and like, I know I am being a little negative, but I can legitimately only recommend it to people who are interested in future Nintendo titles and just want a unique experience. And when half the titles are using the second screen, is literally like, you can play on the second screen. It's cool, but it can be awfully distracting. And but the way you manage, like, just the home screen and stuff, it's set up very well with, like, just being able to touch around and stuff feels very, having an iPad and iPhone, it's great to be able to sit on my couch, have the gamepad, and just sit back and just kind of like tap through, you know, similar to how you felt when you first used the Wiimote and it actually worked, you know, and point right. the screen and move the cursor. It just feels very natural, right? So, I mean, just first impressions. I'm not going to go into more detail on that. I mean, over the next couple of weeks, as I dig into it, we'll be talking a lot more about it, and Jocelyn will be able to offer her, because she was interested in hearing this as well, because she's looking forward to, not that she's gonna buy one ever, because I think the Wii totally threw her off the Nintendo bandwagon with Zelda not really living up to her expectations, but, you know, I mean, being a Nintendo fan, you want to make sure Nintendo's going to stick around, and you never know. Like, the console could, it's hard to tell at this point in time. The console could thrive, or it could just, I mean, the Wii sort of died in the fourth or fifth year of its life cycle. So it had about 2 years of, when is Nintendo going to try and do something new? So if the Wii U can make it that long, that'd be great. But I think they're in a harder position than they were in the last cycle. So
Right.
if they can only last like 1 or 2 years with this thing, that's not a good sign because I mean, the gamepad's very expensive. The system you're buying is probably a third of the cost, whereas the gamepad is really the thing you're investing in. I mean, controllers are expensive enough, but I mean, having a $150 controller in your hand and like your coffee next to it just makes you feel really nervous. But I mean, that's probably enough Wii U. Do you have any more questions about the Wii U or?
No, that's all I know about it, actually, is
Yeah.
all I've asked you, so I'm good.
All right,
We
good.
should probably continue on.
Yes. So quickly, Transformers War for Cybertron. Jocelyn had talked about, or no, we talked about this on TCC. She picked it up for you. How are you enjoying it?
I am. I'm really enjoying it. It's a much more straightforward game than Mass Effect.
Hmm.
There are different kinds of weapons you can pick up and use, but there are, five. That's kind of it. Maybe a little bit more than that when you get into heavy weapons. But it is a huge nostalgic trip for me because I will date myself and say that I grew up watching the original Transformers animated series on TV and playing with the toys. Don't go back and watch the original series. It's not good.
What about the
But
movie?
paired with but paired with the toys, it is a part of my childhood and led to a lot of imagination. I mean, you're talking about robots that change into vehicles and planes and stuff. I mean, every 8-year-old's dream, right? The voice acting in this is really, really good. I only recognize really one or two voices. Peter Cullen, of course, being Optimus Prime. He's been Prime in kind of almost every really large version of Transformers that there has been, and Optimus Prime proper, anyway. And he does Prime in this game. There are other voice actors that are doing very well in the game, but I feel like I don't know them because there was kind of a Transformers resurgence about 10 years ago, and I missed it because I was busy post-secondary doing work stuff, and it was like an animated show for 14-year-olds or 12-year-olds on TV on Teletoon or something, and I never caught on. But some of the voice actors sound familiar to me, so I think I've seen clips or whatever. So I mean, having the acting and the story, it's very linear. There's no choose your own adventure. There's chapters, one through 10. And a unique thing about it is that you can start at either chapter 1 or chapter 6. And the difference being that 6 through 10 are the Autobot chapters and 1 through 5 are the Decepticon chapters, which is a really cool way to play the game. So I played chapter 5, then I played chapter 1, and then I played 6, 7, 8, and then I went back to start doing more Decepticon stuff because I didn't want to end the game having not played the Decepticon stuff. Although the way that it feels, I feel like there's going to be kind of like two end levels. There's going to be like two big boss battles to do whatever it is that you need to do. But I'm really enjoying, kind of that back and forth. The controls are hard to master. There's a couple of easy ones, but transforming, and you have different vehicle and weapons controls when you're in vehicle mode. You can also choose to be, you're always in a squad, just like Mass Effect, actually, but you can choose to be Optimus Prime, Bumblebee, or insert character required for story here, be it a plane or a tank. So there's like a scout class, a leader class, and then like a soldier class, I guess, is the other one. And then scout, I think, is what they call the planes. And same thing for the Decepticons. Whenever you have like different ones called like a warrior and essentially the same roles. But what's really cool is that the transformations and the gameplay are very, very seamless. It's quick, but it's cool looking. It's not like in the Transformer Michael Bay movies where they take freaking 5 minutes to change, like, and there's all these little teeny moving parts. No, they kind of flip over twice. There's a couple of moving parts, and then they're off. And what I really like about it is that it really feels like it's part of the world. Like they really encourage you, both in gameplay and story, to change a lot. Because if you had this ability as a Transformer and you were in battle, you'd obviously exploit it. And one of the coolest things I've ever experienced was, like you're a scout, you're on a mission, you're flying from enemy fighters that are everywhere, and it's all Cybertron space stuff. So you're not like a plane that requires forward momentum. You're more like a Harrier jet where you can kind of stop in dead air, move up and down, do all this kind of stuff. But you have like afterburners and boosts and stuff. So you're flying low to try to avoid these guys, and you see like a health pickup on the ground, but you can't get it because you're a plane. Well, transform. So you transform, and without losing any forward momentum, you roll into robot mode, land, run, pick up the health bar, and then you transform again. And when you transform again, you jump up in the air automatically, transform into a plane, and keep going. And it was the most seamless, badass thing that I've ever done in a video game to date, of that type. Like, it was just, it was so much fun. You really feel like you're in control of the Transformer universe when you play the game. It's pretty straightforward beyond that. I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, shooting bad guys. There's different waves. You know, you have to get to a certain point before the save will let you continue and that kind of stuff. There's a lot of really large environments. The art direction is beautiful. You can tell that the people that made this, and you can find behind the scenes videos online. You can tell the people that made this really were Transformers fans growing up. Like, they made the game that they've been waiting 25 years to make. And I mean, it's great so far. I've got no qualms with it. I haven't played a whole lot more since I spoke to you about it on the Sigil Cafe, because I've been mostly playing Mass Effect 3. But beyond that, I mean, it's great. Have you played it before?
I played it when it came out. I actually rented it and went through it, and actually played a bit of the multiplayer too. It's a cool game. And the moment you mentioned where you land, transform, and then grab your thing and jump up and go rip, 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 and transform back in and fly away. It's one of the coolest moments in video games. And the best part is that you're in control of it. It's not a cinematic. Where in most games it's like, oh, it was so cool when Shepard totally like sucker punched that guy. Well, you didn't do that. It was the cinematic. I mean, you may have hit the right trigger or something, but that's what I remember. And I'm not big on Transformers. My Transformers experience, I like Transformers, but my experience is the Michael Bay films, specifically one, and certain parts of two, mainly the battle in the forest. And I kind of ignore everything else about that movie. I have not seen three, but I have seen the original anime.
Three is actually not bad. If you're looking if you're looking for a really decent action movie, if you've seen two and know how much it sucks, three is a step up. Like, you'll enjoy three. There is some, if you like that, if you're watching it just for that forest scene, watching three will blow your mind. Some of the stuff that they do technically in that movie is stunning.
Yeah.
Not a great movie as far as cinema goes, but the technical stuff that they pull off is just mind blowing.
Yeah. I'm not a big cinema person. I don't know why I did that in a French accent, but that was for Val, I guess. And I love my popcorn or comedy stuff. Like, I'm not like, I'm gonna go watch The Artiste in theaters this weekend with my, and I'm gonna sneak some wine in or something. I don't know. I should see three, really, like, because four is just around the corner, right? And they're just going to keep making those things. So I might as well keep
Yeah, going. I'm pretty sure three is on Netflix, or at least it was last time I checked.
I think it is. That's where I keep seeing it. It's like, I really should watch that. But are you interested in the sequel to this Transformers game, Fall of Cybertron?
Very much so, actually. I saw like an hour-long making of video one time. I was just kind of dicking around on the internet, and I watched most of it. And then I stopped because I didn't want to get in too much of it, because I thought, well, you know, I actually have access to play this stuff now. So, I mean, maybe I'll buy it for myself. And what happened was, when I realized that, oh, this is a sequel, I'll have to play the first one. Mm-hmm. When the second one came out, which is The Fall of Cybertron, I knew that the original would then go into the bargain bins and stuff like that, and the recycled games at EB. So whenever Jocelyn and I would go into EB, I would pick this thing up and look and say, oh, it's $25 or $30. Like, well, it's a couple, you know, it's like a year old or more. And I mean, I hear it's good, but obviously the next one is better. And I thought, well, you know, I'll wait to see if it goes down to like $15. Because we've picked up a couple of games, you know, for $15 here and there. Mm-hmm. And they turned out to be pretty fun. So I was like, well, I mean, not knowing enough and not being a huge gamer, I just decided not to. And it was always one of those things where I would pick it up and I would look at it in the store. It's like, yeah, this is really cool. It's still not for $14, and then put it back. So then one day, I think it was the day that Jocelyn went to go get Halo 4, she brought a bunch of other games to turn in. She got some store credit for them and stuff like that. And then she brought home War for Cybertron for me as a present. So, because she had seen me pick it up every time I went into the store.
This game looks cool.
Aww. Yeah. So, and I have to say, like, I have been laughing out loud at the game. I have been just really, like, playing it like I'm eight. It's good. Just such a throwback, you know, for someone that grew up on Transformers. It's such a great game and a very thoughtful gift for someone that is really into this kind of stuff. One thing that I will say is that you should check out IDW, I think, did some Transformers comics. And there's currently one out right now, and it's unfortunately the name of it is escaping me, but I'll send you the link when I can find it on Comixology, because you have an iPad, do you not?
Yeah.
I'll recommend, I think it's Autocracy,
is
the name of it. And it's written by one of the guys at Blizzard. And the art is a little bit different, but apparently it is a really gutsy Transformers story. And I think that you, knowing what you like in video games, I think that you might dig, I might be able to get you into Transformers proper.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. You have another note here, a curiosity you want to quickly, and then we'll move on because we're like,
I know,
half an hour. We talked a lot about games.
We talked a lot about games. Yeah. I didn't want to say anything. It's like I'm not hosting. I have to be in the guest chair.
No. Co-hosting.
Co-hosting.
If you're doing quickfire news, then you're co-hosting.
Oh, I see. Okay, so I'm going to get in trouble now for letting the show go too long. Great.
I'll probably get in trouble. Which is fine. I mean, you can stop listening later. Curiosity, I think I mentioned this on TCC, and I played it for a little bit, just like I was curious, and then I didn't touch it, but you find it pretty intriguing, you're saying here.
I find it really interesting. I haven't played much, but I've certainly watched 10-15 minutes evaporate as I try it, because it's like bubble wrap for your iPad.
Basically,
with a goal. It's really kind of silly. I can understand why so many people are playing it. I think it's a unique social experiment. That's what I find so interesting about it. I mean, having a giant cube virtually out there for people to chip away at in kind of like a reverse Minecraft sort of mentality is really interesting. I've seen people carve things in like hearts and website addresses and things like that. Body parts. Yes, lots of penises. What I find interesting about all that is that people... There's somebody else that's chipping away at the same time that you are, inevitably, because there's a lot of people that have this game. I don't really want to call it a game. It's a social experiment. And it's you go to do something. You're like, oh, I'm going to make a square. Or I'm going to see if I can make a spiral. And then by chance, the game refreshes and all the hard work that you just did disappears.
Yeah. Like, I guess we should this game is about... chiseling off layers of a cube, and then inside is a secret that the person who chisels off the last pixel gets access to it, and they can do whatever they want with it, either share it or whatever. And it's Peter Molyneux, so you know, like, he's touting this big secret, and it could be, who knows, a game announcement, whatever. Mm. It could change a million times before we even find out what it is, but anyways, continue.
No, that's all I have to say. I've only really noodled around with it enough to, you know, get a couple of runs of 1,000 blocks in a row going, which isn't difficult. No. Discover that you can use more than one finger. Yeah,
just kinda...
you can just kind of like mash on it if you'd like. It's one of those weird things that appeals to the completionist in me, but at the same time, there's a little voice in the back of my head that says, "You're wasting your life. Stop it. Go read something."
Yeah.
So I have not spent.
And play.
Yeah, so I have not spent very much time on it. If I didn't have an iPad, I certainly wouldn't be bothering with it. Because is it even available on the iPhone, or is it just...
Yeah, it's iPhone, iPad, and then a bunch of Android devices. And you're right, like, probably on the iPad it plays a little better. You can get all your 10 fingers in there and jam them in. It's interesting, and people should at least look into it. If not, what was the website I had... It's like onthecube.tumblr.com, I think it was.
Yes, I think you can, if other people listening, you can go to the Citadel Cafe episode 42. The show notes are there, and I've got that in the blog. I think it's Tumblr. Yeah, onthecube.tumblr.com, something like that.
Yeah, and it's just basically it's a Tumblr blog with all the. Oh, and fair warning, there is probably some penises and some boobs in there. People are weird, right? They feel the need to display their. Yeah. Anyways,
it's like a digital bathroom stall, right?
Yeah, basically. There's some chick's number, call me, in there, and then there's also like someone
maybe
from Invader Grimm or whatever. Is it Invader
Zim? Oh, Invader Zim, Grr, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing that.
But anyways, that was Gamers in Part One, what we're playing. Let's actually mm-hmm. move on to the first of all, before we start Quickfire News, we will do a quick plug. We would like to thank Doghouse Systems for sponsoring the show. Use the code TheGamersIn when ordering your brand spanking new Doghouse system to show your love for all things TGI. Big thanks to Doghouse for their continued support for our show. Head to DoghouseSystems.com to take advantage of their Black Friday sales this weekend. I didn't write that. That mysteriously appeared. So, Jocelyn is
the note ninja has been here.
See, I'll read anything that's there. That's why I made sure to change, because I would have said, "Welcome to the Gamers Inn. My name is Jocelyn. I'm joined by my co-host Ryan." Oh wait,
that's you're not Jocelyn.
Yeah, that's like fuck San Diego. What was that? It was
Anchorman.
Yeah, Anchorman. that definitely would have happened.
Yeah. Anyway, I could have had some fun. It's a good thing I didn't know that.
Yeah, now everyone who guesses is going to mess with me. Bastards. Amnesia Fortnite Humble Bundle. Double Fine will be pulling back the curtain on their behind-closed-doors game jam. Amnesia Fortnite is a two-week period where developers at Double Fine stop what they're working on and form teams to create a game in 2 weeks. After that two-week period, a few projects would be chosen to go into full production, which is how we got Costume Quest, Stacking, and Iron Brigade. With this Humble Bundle, you get in on the process. Vote on your favorite pitches to be prototyped, and the top four will be made and live-streamed for contributors. At the end of it all, contributors also get to download and play the completed prototypes, as well as some early concepts for Once Upon a Monster and Costume Quest.
Guild Wars 2 players upset at the apparent arrival of endgame Arbor Grind. Guild Wars 2 maker ArenaNet has been criticized by players for having what looks like double standards. The debate revolves around the new ascended tier of armor being added this month to the MMO. In ArenaNet's own words, the new rarity type falls between exotic and legendary on the spectrum of rarity and has a slightly higher stats than exotics. The crucial part of that sentence is being slightly higher stats. We, the players, were assured there wouldn't be statistical differences between sets at level 80, only cosmetic alterations. Players are likely upset because MMOs are already a pissing contest and they didn't need to be reminded of that.
Wii U eShop puts power in the hands of devs. Marketing manager Mikhail Haveri from Frozenbyte, the developer behind Trine 2, has made some pretty glowing comments about the eShop. We can set our own pricing and actually continuing on that by setting our own sales whenever we want. It is very close to what Apple and Steam are doing at the moment and very indie friendly. Alongside this feature, Nintendo is not charging for patches and developers can patch their games almost as much as they want. Which is great news considering the big stink Fez developer kicked up a few months back about Microsoft and their patching policies.
Microsoft makes special consoles for Xbox Live 10th anniversary. Microsoft is rewarding the members who have been on Xbox Live the longest with a special console. As revealed by Xbox Live's Major Nelson on Twitter, Microsoft is surprising some of the Xbox Live members that have been with the company the longest by sending them a special limited edition console featuring 10-year anniversary imagery decals. Thanks for all your money. Here, have a sticker.
Dev Talks Steam sales for rest of the year. Get your credit card ready because the Steam sales are almost here. Tomas Bacco, CEO of Artery Studios, revealed in a blog post that Steam will have a week-long autumn sale starting on the 21st, which is tomorrow, and the winter sale will be from December 20th to January 4th. Nothing is confirmed by Valve yet, but keep your eyes on the Steam store just to be sure.
Call of Duty Black Ops 2 sales smash records, makes $500 million in one day. Call of Duty Black Ops 2 delivered the biggest entertainment launch of the year after sales of the popular video game hit 500 million worldwide in 24 hours, according to publisher Activision. We believe Call of Duty is the biggest entertainment launch of the year for the fourth year in a row now, Activision Blizzard CEO Bobby Kotick said in the release Friday. Life-to-date sales of Call of Duty of the Call of Duty franchise have exceeded worldwide theatrical box office receipts for Harry Potter and Star Wars, the two most successful movies franchises of all time. The question on everyone else's mind is who will buy Activision, Warner Brothers or Disney?
That is a great question. And with that, we are going to move to topic of the week, and we are talking, I believe, animation and video games and on a broad scale. I mean, Joel is an animator, a cartoonist. He draws for a living and playing video games. He notices things that us non-gamers or non-artists would be like, oh my god, that was still so cool, even though he's talking and it's like,
that, yeah,
you know?
So yeah, anyways, why don't you kick it off? Animation muggles don't always see what I see. But to preface everything, I mean, I had about 6 years experience in animation working in television before I moved on to be an independent illustrator. So I notice a lot of these things. And I mean, earlier in the show, I was praising Mass Effect. And I also have a lot of beefs with the way that the game is produced. I've been experiencing a lot of glitches. I know for a fact that some of them are unique to me because even Jocelyn has said, like, that's never happened when I play the game. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of, like, two clips of a character not lining up where, you know, Shepard will end a sentence with all of his weight on his left foot standing on this side of the camera. And then the next thing he says, he blips to over here on the right side of the camera. There's this huge jar in my head and I'm going, what was that? Like it takes you out of the game. And for a game that is so immersive and gets you really into the story, to have technical stuff like that pull you out is a real downer. The other thing, of course, is lip sync. Now I was even notorious among my peers for being kind of a stickler for bad lip sync. And I feel like it's something that has been able to be done for years on paper by Disney and other people, even for television. There's no excuse why lip sync has to be off in a video game. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask you, is there something that I'm missing? Like, is there some sort of thing where the processing power, the heat of your unit, is there something that's happening in the Xbox that's throwing this kind of stuff off? Or is it just limitations of the console, of the computer power? Because if you have those kind of limitations, to me it would be like, well, you have to work within them as opposed to pushing them to the point where they break.
Yeah, I mean, not being a developer, but sort of knowing some of the processes in developing video games, I believe you have two different camps. You have the camp where the developer has done mocap for entire body and facial mocap as well. So a good example would be the Uncharted series. You have not played, not having a PlayStation, but they do really well to mocap with the actors. So the guys who are playing the characters are in the mocap suits running around doing stuff, but they've also like facial capped as well. So when they transition that to the lip sync, it meshes really well. Whereas I believe in Mass Effect, they use software to do lip sync, which it's kind of hit and miss, I believe, especially in some of their earlier games, like with Dragon Age and Mass Effect 1, the lip sync would always, it was procedurally generated. It was a programming app that did it. Right. Whereas in some games, we'll actually, they'll go through the effort to kind of do the facial animation. If there's a game you really should look for in terms of animation and lip sync, it's L.A. Noire. I don't know if you've heard of that game
at all. I have heard of it, yeah.
They basically said, okay, Joel Duggan's going to be playing this game. He's an artist. We need to make sure all the facial stuff looks amazing. So, like, all the facial stuff is separately mo-capped, and they do all their lines in this facial mo-cap machine. And it's just, the lip syncing is amazing. It's like 100%. And the facial animations are real. It's like the actors, they hired real actors to do these facial animations. In terms of body animations, it's not as great because it was separately mocap. But I don't think there's a game out there that does it perfectly. It's really
Well, I
tough.
mean, I understand that there has to be, I mean, you can't make this thing perfect, otherwise it would never get done. And I understand that there's deadlines and launch dates, and it's not always in the hands of the people, the artists that are creating the game. I mean, there's producers and distributors and all that kind of stuff involved. It's the same thing with TV. But I feel like a lot of things are just so basic. I mean, a really good example is, you're talking about the body mocap stuff, where, a character will say something and they're going to point at you, or they're going to gesture with their hand, some sort of neutral gesture, like, well, I don't know, they shrug the shoulders or something like that. And I found that that's been happening a lot after the character is done talking. It's really weird. I mean, for anybody watching live now, I can be like, so Ryan, what do you think? And it makes no sense. It's really, it's like the audio should be driving the acting, not the other way around. And that's the problem. I feel like they've got a certain number of prefab animations that they've mocapped. And they've said, okay, here's a bunch of like kind of casual gestures that Shepard can make. Here's a couple ones that all the female characters can make, because they all do the same one. Which is funny, because I've seen Garrus and Shepard both give one another the same head nod. I call it the Mass Effect head bob now, because it's kind of like, well, what do you think, Garrus? And he bobs his head to the side, and then he comes back into the center. And it's the same thing over and over again. And it's really weird, because Shepard will say something negative. Something bad will happen. The commander and chief will give him bad news. And Shepard will be like, right. And it's like, that's a positive reaction to very odd, news coming from someone. And that kind of stuff just is, it does take me out. I understand I'm being very picky, but I feel like, you should have, I mean, they go through all this time to record the audio, the actors and stuff. Why not have, positive and negative motion captures? Why not have the ability to say, this is an integral cut scene in the story. We have to animate it by hand. Like, I understand it's CG, but I mean, it's not that difficult to then say, look, most of the stuff is going to be mocap, but for this 1 3-second scene where Shepard has to say something really important to Tally, we just have to give that to somebody and say, just animate this. Just take the day and animate it, because it's supposed to be cinematic and important. But I feel like everything kind of gets treated the same, and it just kind of, it does tick me out of it from time to time, with stuff like that. The bigger problem I'm having is the glitches where the camera will be like inside somebody, and I'll be looking at the inside polygons of somebody's arm, or Shepard will be like, what do you think, Garrus? And then Garrus is not in frame, and he's just like, well, I don't know, let's go over here and see what that door leads to. And then it goes back to Shepard, and he's like, exactly, I agree. And he's like, well, he wasn't there. There was no one in the shot. How did you miss that? Like, it's frustrating for a perfectionist when it comes to this kind of stuff.
And I mean, for me, I mean, I can say that, especially with the Mass Effect series, I think animation will be perfect the day that we can get a romance scene in a game where that doesn't make you laugh. In all three of the Mass Effect games, they're awkward and they just make you want to laugh. Like, it's not like at the end of two, the romance scene is like your final embrace before going off to fight the suicide mission. Yet, what should be sweet and romantic and kind of sad is really just awkward and funny, Like, it's just the way they animate it just doesn't look right, and like hands and stuff. So, I mean, in terms of the next generation, that's something. Again, this is sounding really perverted, but I'm not talking about porn. I'm talking about like a romance scene and getting that right without making it look awkward. Because I mean, that stuff happens in real life, and I mean, movies do it so well. I mean, again, not talking about porn. I'm just talking about like romantic scenes between people. I don't want to give people the wrong idea here, but like with Mass Effect
Well,
4.
even an intimate conversation, like a candlelit dinner, take the
Let's.
physical stuff out of it. I mean, that stuff has to be believable. So, I mean, if you can't believe that the two characters' eye contact is even being made, and that's the problem that I have with a lot of this automated stuff. Someone's eyes are meant to be looking at Shepard. So the computer is programmed with those eyes to be looking at an invisible box inside of Shepard's head. So she's, say like Miranda is always looking at Shepard. But then she goes to turn her head, and what happens is her eyes get locked on Shepard. And she'll turn over here and her eyes will unnaturally roll into the top of her head. And I'm looking at it like she is supposed to be saying something really serious to Shepard, but because of one reason or another, like she's too far in the corner because of where I'm standing, because she's in my squad, or, but I mean, if all this kind of stuff is so important, like why not? Like I would even be okay if, like, you know, if I finish a level and then there's a cutscene. If Miranda was on my left when I finished the level, but she's supposed to be on my right in the cutscene, I'm okay with that continuity shifting because that it makes sense for the animation. It's going to make it go better. But if she's on my left and she's supposed to be looking at me through the back of her skull, and then every time you look over her shoulder and she's got this really weird sideways glance to you, it completely takes you out of whatever, you know, either she's supposed to be very happy or very gracious in a situation where she's thanking Shepard, and she looks like she's rolling her eyes at her and just at him, and just that kind of stuff just doesn't add up for me. There are examples of it going well. I had the same complaints over Batman Arkham Asylum. But in Arkham City, which is that's the sequel, right? I don't want to get those mixed up. Yeah, Arkham City is the next one. The lip sync was way better. Really well done. I felt like they did better with more realistic characters, not so much with like the Joker where he's got like a big funny mouth and a lot of teeth and stuff. But all of the Batman, Catwoman, even Two-Face with like, you know, his lips all messed up, were really good. And I feel like if you can do it in one game, there's no reason why you can't do it in, you know, other games. I mean, I would think that people that do stuff like Mass Effect would be looking at other video games and saying, like, look, this is really good. We have to, that's our bar. You know, I remember it's a line from someone that made the special effects for Spider-Man 2, and they basically took the best shot from Spider-Man 1 and just told all the animators and told all the production staff, this is now our bar for the worst shot in Spider-Man 2. And I feel like moving forward, I expected lip sync to get better. And I feel like in Mass Effect 3, it's gotten worse compared to Mass Effect 2. Now, I know this is very specific to Mass Effect, but I've really only played about half a dozen video games. So I don't have a lot to bring forward. The other thing that I find really hard with animation is that they set false expectations sometimes. Like you'll have really different things like a Blizzard cutscene where Blizzard does this amazing cinematic that really brings you into this world, but then the gameplay and the animations and stuff in the game are nothing like, you know, what those animations are. And I understand it's, you know, very similar to like a movie trailer not being exactly what the movie is going to be like either. But I feel like, you know, there could be some bridges made between, you know, if you're going to use in-game hardware and in-game software for your cinematics to really kind of, I don't know, up the level, because everybody wants video games to be more cinematic and more movie-like or more immersive. And I feel like there's a lot of stuff that's I've been seeing that's been taking me out of it. And I maybe I'm just too much of a snob, or I'm expecting too much, having seen other things. I don't know.
Do you play StarCraft II, the campaign in that game?
I did. I haven't completed it, but I played most of it.
So, I mean, that's probably the best example. I mean, Blizzard's weird. I mean, when it comes to World of Warcraft specifically, they use their cinematic in the advertisements, which seems really wrong to me because you're selling people on a very different game than when compared to the cinematics. But with StarCraft II, the intro cinematic is sort of on par with the in-game cinematics. So, I mean, the in-game cinematics are obviously done in-engine. It doesn't represent exactly what the gameplay is, but I think that's probably their only game out that sort of looks at the really well done cinematics and tries to get like really close to it with the in-engine stuff. I mean, did you find that or?
It's been a really long time since I've played StarCraft II. I want to say I don't remember being taken very far out of it. But the other thing about StarCraft II is that there's an awful lot of stuff with people in
Suits.
people in suits. Like I obviously have a lot less of an issue with Mass Effect when one of my armor pieces is a hood or a mask or something that covers my mouth. Because, I mean, they go through the extra effort of giving me like a radio voice because I'm obviously speaking through some sort of comm system. But it cuts out a lot of the bad facial animation that you don't see. I do remember, you know what? I'm recalling a conversation I had with Garrett from StarCast about the animations and stuff not looking very good on the in-game stuff in StarCraft 2. And he's like, "What? What are you talking about?" And they relied really heavily on textures in the animation. And my Mac wouldn't handle it. So I had very low graphic settings. So my in-game cinematics were not very good. And I was told, and I don't think I ever really followed through to watch all of them, but I do remember watching at least one of them on YouTube where somebody had captured something with the full graphic settings on like a doghouse system or something, and it looked really good. And I think that was probably one of the reasons why I'm not really able to draw a comparison for StarCraft 2 is because my system was set so low that it really didn't matter for me.
Well, I mean, just to wrap up, I mean, I would recommend definitely checking out L.A. Noire for the facial stuff. But if you want to probably see the best, in my opinion, as a gamer, not as an animator, the best game you could probably see for mocap, facial sync, facial animation, lip syncing and stuff would be the Uncharted series. Just do a quick YouTube for Uncharted 3 and get some cinematics in there, or even 2. And let me know what you think about that, because they're probably one of the best series out there. I mean, Naughty Dog does some great things with mocap, and obviously, what's his name? Nolan North performs really well when it comes to voice acting. So, not to make you want to go out and buy a PS3, but I mean, the Uncharted series is really well known for their great animation and not giving you false expectations. Like, you're playing an Indiana Jones movie when you do the Uncharted stuff, and it feels really good, and the animation's great. Even when you're in control of the character, like when you're walking up a set of stairs, and you go too close to the wall, your character will put his hand up against the wall and kind of like brace himself as he's walking down these steps. So your hands move. You don't just kind of like walk up against the wall and kind of hover against it. Your character's reacting, right? So I mean, that would probably be my recommendation.
I mean, we have a copy of L.A. Noire here, and I've heard lots of good things about it. Again, it's just, it's a matter of time. I can really only dive into one, maybe two games at a time. I mean, Jocelyn and I have actually been slacking on our WoW play because she's been so busy getting ready to go away, and then, of course, I've been spending more time on Mass Effect than I have had to play WoW. So, the thing that I find about the animation issues too is that, I mean, I understand that I'm picky. And I know that when I go to, say, a certain type of movie, like an action movie, like the Untouchables, the ones that come out with like Stallone and all those guys in it, I don't go in there expecting a Shakespearean plot, So, but when I go into a video game, which is all animation, it's really kind of hard to go in there and say, "Oh, well, I'm only expecting mediocre animation because it's just a video game." You kind of expect the best that the game can give you, and given the standards, I don't think it's too much to ask for one game to live up to the bar that has been set by others. A really good example that just came to me now was the opening cutscene from Kingdoms of Amalur, and it's the part where your corpse is being wheeled in a wheelbarrow by these two kind of gnomish type characters, and nothing is lining up.
Yeah, that
Like
game's bad.
absolutely nothing. And like that's the kind of thing where I look at it and say, somebody put a stamp of approval on this and said, "Yes, proof, print, send to press, distribute, give to everybody, sell for money." And I mean, the moment that I opened up that game to play one night, I mean, I got through the character creation screen. That was kind of fun. And then I watched the cinematic. I was like, "This is how you're kicking off this game?" And then everything else I ran into, like everything was very slidey. Everything was very, in animation, there's a term like even timing, if that makes any sense. Think about something like a metronome. It's got even timing, never changes, versus a pendulum, which swings very quickly through the middle, but then slows down at either side, which is more dynamic. So all of the actions that you want to do in animation are dynamic. There's only very specific situations that you want kind of an even timing situation. But a lot of the things in Amalur were very even. Like someone would be screaming and their arms would be moving just as fast fast or as slow as they would be if they were talking normally. And that kind of stuff was like, this is just bad. Like, people are just, they're phoning at home, you know, like, what, you, someone sent it overseas to get it done for as cheap as possible, you know? And, yeah. And which is, and that was, I mean, that's, it sounds like a generalization, but it's an industry fact from like working in TV. A lot of stuff for the sake of cost would get sent overseas to get done, and it would never be quite up to par because you're dealing with people that are just pushing out stuff as fast as possible just to get it finished. And, you know, like, it's one of those things where I just don't understand, you know, how someone can say this is done, show people, when, like, it's that wrong, it's that off. Like, we're not just me, not just an animator, but someone like, I mean, you agreed with me, like, you remember that scene, you know, and you know what I'm talking about when you say that nothing in that scene lined up. I mean, like, when people that aren't animators can see it, I think that becomes a problem.
You abnormal, you know? People.
Animation muggles.
Yeah. It's the polite way of putting it. Another game you might want to check out and actually be able to play, Jocelyn's starting that new Call of Duty podcast with some guys at the Doghouse Systems. I can't remember.
Yeah, Clark is the guy she's doing it with.
It's like COD podcast.
Codcast.
That's great. That's a great name. if she ends up picking up Black Ops 2, from what I've seen online, the facial animations look really well, which is crazy because that game is a shooter, and more so than others in the sense that it's multiplayer focused, and then you have the campaign that a few people play through, but they put a lot of effort into that campaign. So might want to sit in there and see how it looks when Jocelyn gets around to playing that one. But that we should probably wrap that up. Animation. I think that was a great conversation. I mean, just in terms of all the stuff we learned. I mean, Jocelyn and I don't really get into the whole technical side of things, so it's really great to have somebody who understands that sort of stuff.
Well, thanks, man. I mean, I know that you guys obviously come more from the gameplay side of things, and that's where I come in kind of fresh, where, like, you know, I'm playing Mass Effect 1, and I'm okay with the controls, and she was just like, "Buh, like, these are horrible," and I was like, "This is all I know," so I was okay with it, you know. But then the animation stuff, she's like, "That's fine," and I was obviously having problems with that too, so I appreciate the opportunity to rant.
Yeah, no problem. So I mean, we'll just move into listener feedback here. No reviews, but I will mention that this Friday we're going to be doing Spartan Ops episode 3 live stream at probably 10 o'clock again. I'm working on getting the archive stuff kind of edited into a nice digestible thing, and we'll put that up on YouTube when we have it. We're also doing I did some Wii U streaming, did the unboxing. You can see me all excited and stuff. I'm again going to be porting that over to YouTube very soon and doing a blog post. I haven't actually streamed Zombie U yet. I'm probably going to do that before the week is out, so you guys get to actually see a game that is showcases the Wii U really well. So you have that to look forward to. We got an email here from Paul the Swick Swickard, and just giving us a little bit of a good job, guys, with our announcement of our sponsor, Doghouse Systems. Just congrats on the sponsors, folks. That's awesome. And, you know, thanks, Paul. And we want to thank Doghouse Systems again for sponsoring the show. We really appreciate it. But before we go, I want to give Joel a chance to plug some stuff, because I know when I was on TCC, I talked for like 15 minutes about what the game is doing. So go nuts, man. Plug away.
Well, I know that we've been at this for a little while, so I'll try to keep it as short as I can. I do an online comic, Starcrossed, at starcrossedonline.com. I try to post a comic once a week. I've been very busy this fall with a new book that just came out, so I have been a little bit slow on that, but you can usually find other blog posts and art-related things on the site when I don't post a comic, or when I'm late posting a comic, which lately has been more often than not. You can also find me on Wednesday nights on the Citadel Cafe at thecitadelcafe.com. And that is a podcast that Ryan has been on, as well as some other guests. This week is going to be Andrew Dorfman from Geeks vs. Nerds. And it is a sci-fi fantasy entertainment podcast. Myself, Peyton, usually Chad, but also a couple of other guests come in from time to time to just talk about the cool sci-fi fantasy stuff we're watching on TV and movies and stuff. It's very laid back. If you're into video games, you will probably enjoy it, because I do drop the odd video game limerick here or there. Mm-hmm. There once was a game from Nantucket. No. So yeah, that's it. Follow me on Twitter and Google+. Just my name, Joel Duggan.
Cool. Well, Well, thanks, Joel. I really appreciate you you coming in to co-host with me.
My pleasure, sir.
Yeah, guys' night. Yeah, you know. Actually, our only lady who was listening actually left because she said, you guys are going kind of long. And we are going to wrap it up, Val, who is listening to the podcast, I'm sure. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com, where you can find our live feed, our live chat, and our forums. We are hoping to get back into those forums very soon. Email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Also, follow us on Twitter. You can find Jocelyn at GISGamer, myself at R. Murphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. You can also find the show on Facebook and on Google+. Just search for The Gamers Inn or go to our website and click the links. And don't forget to leave us an iTunes review, as it is the best way for our show to reach new listeners. And before I go, I just wanted to give a quick shout-out and thank you to my... to Jocelyn's brother, Greg, for creating our awesome music. You can find him on Twitter, at SoundsInfluence. We would also like to thank Joel Duggan of StarCraft Online, who drew our Twitter avatars and created our logo. You can find him on Twitter at Joel Duggan, as he said, or read his comic at StarCrossedOnline.com. Thank you for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember to tune in next week.
Where the show will not be 90 minutes long.
You know what? I listen to podcasts that are 3 hours long. You guys could suffer through it.